All right, guys, welcome back to another episode of Persuasion by the Pint. I'm Jonathan Taylor, along with
Sean McCool, and we've got a special guest in the studio with us today, the virtual studio, the old stream yard, Doberman Dan.
I wish some some barking sounds on here. I was like, you know.
Oh man, yeah. That'd be hilarious. Although the applause was a pleasant surprise. I there appreciate you go.
We aim to please. It's all downhill from here, Dan. Don't worry about it.
That's all right. You've hit the highlight of our show.
That was it. I think Jonathan paid $600 for that sound effect right there.
That's right.
So we're glad to have you on. Dan and I have known each other for a long time. This is the first time Dan and Jonathan have met. Maybe. We don't know. We're trying to figure that out. That's right. But we think it's the first time they've met. So, Dan, welcome to the show.
Thanks for the invitation. Been looking forward to it.
Yeah. So, I got to put my glasses on as we move into the beer segment. But before we do that, I'll give a quick introduction to Dan. I'll just kind of not like the official introduction. I do want to read one thing. So,
Oh, now I'm nervous.
Yeah.
No, it's all good stuff.
It's the same one that probably everybody. No, that's not where it was. Where was it? So I can't even remember where it was now. So,
is it myself aggrandizing?
Yes, those. Those are like your, yeah, probably those. But anyway,
yeah. By the way, it tells all the good stuff, skips all the bad stuff, basically.
Yeah, I mean, basic copywriting 101, right?
So, right.
I'll just say this: Dan has testimonials from like Ken McCarthy. If you don't know Ken McCarthy, then you're not really doing your research as a internet marketer or direct response marketer. And then one from some guy named Gary Halbert. I'm not sure who that is, but he just gave you some kudos. One. He approved you.
Yeah, we don't know him.
He gave you some seal of approval. So sounds pretty impressive. Like the good housekeeping seal of approval or something from Gary Halbert. So that's pretty cool. But no, seriously, I met Dan, I guess, probably back in 2010, I think.
Mm-hmm. So I was trying to remember today. I knew it had been at least 10 years.
Yeah. And I think it was 2000. It was in, I think it was in Jacksonville. You were doing something with a couple other guys. I think Francis was there. I think Justin Brooke was there. Pretty sure that was in Jacksonville. It's like a.
I think so, event. Yeah.
Yeah. So I was a newbie copywriter at that time. I'd only been in the business for about 2 years, if that. And it was kind of exciting to get to meet a legend, and we've kept in touch off and on since. And here you are today. So, but
wait a minute, who did you meet then? Who was a legend?
Justin Brooke, obviously.
Okay, all right. I could clarify that because the only legend, if you're referring to me,
I was referring to
one legend, the legend in my own mind.
Well, that counts. We're all in marketing here. That counts.
That's right.
So cool. Well, Dan's a classic direct response copywriter. We'll learn more about him as we go here and his philosophies and things like that. Mm-hmm. I mean, you've been in this business for how long, Dan?
Oh, geez. It was either late 1994, early 1995, that I wrote my first piece of copy. I wasn't a freelancer back then. I wasn't a freelancer for a really long time. It was for my own mail order business. Right. I didn't even know what copywriting was. All I knew was that you just sold stuff with a letter. Yeah. But that was the first piece I wrote. So like I said, memory fails me sometimes on the little details. So either late 94 or early 95.
Yeah. So good old pre-internet magazine days, like when you had to pony up serious money to even test something.
Yeah. Or do like what I did and test a fractional page ad and literally beg the guy on the phone and tell him, I am so poor. I got one piece of furniture and I only have that because the neighbor gave it to me. It's a couch and it's broken and it smells like cat piss. And I know you're asking $500 for this ad. I can only do 100. So those were the days.
That's good copy right there.
That's right. I'm going to write that one down. Smells like cat piss. So,
yeah, right there. Put that in your Spotify file.
What's sad is that it was really true at the time.
Yeah.
Well, some of the best copy.
Exactly. I was going to say some of the most disappointing or depressing realities of life are actually pretty good in when it comes to sales copy.
Yeah, they can work out pretty good, but it's better talking about them like that was in the past.
Yeah, right, right.
Yeah,
when you're talking about it in the present, yeah. It can really suck.
Oh yeah,
yeah. Well, let's jump into the beer segment here. And Dan, did you bring a drink of any kind? Or
well, I'm gonna disappoint. First of all, I'm really ignorant about beer. Back when I still drank beer, this will show my ignorance. I would usually go with Corona mostly because like I ate at this Mexican restaurant all the time.
Yeah.
And so I'm pretty ignorant about beer. Today I'm just doing Perrier. I didn't bring a beer.
It's a cool bottle though.
Yes.
I won't bore you with the details. I stopped drinking a couple years ago.
Sorry.
Yeah. So,
when I did drink beer, I liked Corona because when I was in Colombia, they served it in a way they called it, either chelada or michelada, which was they put a shot of lime juice in there and salt around the rim and then poured the beer in. It doesn't sound like it'd be that good, but it was actually pretty good. And then I discovered that the Mexicans have their own version of it that I wasn't that crazy about. They, instead of the lime juice, they use tomato juice.
Yes, yeah. I've heard of that.
But I always used to ask for the Corona Michelada when I still drank beer.
Cool. There's nothing wrong with that. So I'm going to put on my... oh, by the way, this segment is sponsored by who? The Original Beer Craft Beer Club. And I got my first bit this week.
Oh, yes.
First delivery. So
Sean's going to intro.
Yeah. So you got a little segment. I mean, you know.
Yeah. So our Craft Beer Club, you can find them over at persuasionbytheplank.com/craftbeer. And you can learn all about them. But they offer outstanding craft beers from the finest independent microbreweries in the U.S., you know that craft beers have exploded in popularity over the past decade. There are thousands of awesome craft beers being produced by new microbreweries every day that are clamoring for your attention. One of the best ways to sample these unique beers is by letting our friends over at the Original Craft Beer Club do all the legwork and tasting to bring you the best beer discoveries in this country, the great U.S. of A. And Sean, you're going to feature one right now.
Yeah, so actually I'm not, sorry.
okay. All of that build up for nothing.
Well, we're already going to do craft beer, and I do have some trivia, because this is really cool. When you get your beer, so I got the case, and there's three of four different kinds of beer that you get every month. So it's like 12 bottles that come in, nicely packed. It was like super, the box was in good shape. Like I was actually very impressed with it. They give you like these little sheets that talk about the beer, the brewer, mm-hmm. and it's also got some trivia on it.
Oh, wow.
So I thought I'd bust out the trivia. And here's a question. Is colder beer better beer? Is colder beer better beer?
I'm going to say no.
All right. Well, we'll find out.
I'm
going
to say, I mean, this is based on coming from a guy who drank all the cheap beers. So when it wasn't Corona, like grab whatever was available. And I think because some of that was pretty nasty, it tasted better cold. But I bet with a quality beer, I'm going to agree with Jonathan.
Yes. So the answer is, while it's hard not to be obsessed with ice cold beer in our culture, it's surprisingly not optimal for drinking many kinds of beers, especially finely crafted beers. Ice cold beers tend to numb your taste buds to much of the flavor of the beer. Malt flavors recede and hop bitterness intensifies to harsher levels when cold. To get all of the flavors the brewer intended, it is recommended to drink lager beers at around 48 degrees and ales at 55 degrees. So
no kidding.
So it's more like a red wine almost than what you would be consider a cold, cold beer. So
48 degrees. Hopefully that's not Celsius.
No, that's Fahrenheit. This is the Craft Beer Club like of America, I think. So it's it's Fahrenheit. Cool. Yeah, so 48 for lagers, 55 or so for ales, and I would probably say the same thing for, you know, porters and stouts, which we like. Which brings me to my pick of the day.
All right.
The reason I didn't go with one of the Craft Beer Club picks is because this name was too good to pass up considering all three of us are on this show today. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it's called The Three Philosophers. I mean, The Three Philosophers, and it's a bourbon barrel, you know, so.
Boy.
How cool. It's like a win. And it's a tall can, too. You gotta love that. So this is a blend of quadruple ale and Belgian something ale with cherries aged in bourbon barrels. And it's about a 9.5% alcohol by volume. And it's one pint on the dot. So.
So I'm curious, Sean, when you got your 12 pack, what's the breakdown on the assortment? Is it a mixture of bourbon barrel ales?
It was mostly ales. There was one IPA and then there was lagers and ales because it's 106 here in Austin today.
So. Can you get a regular shipment from them and tell them I want a mix of these kind of beers and stuff like that?
I haven't figured out how to do that yet, if you can. So I think you can go in and adjust it, but I'm not sure. I haven't figured out how to do it on the site yet. So
that'd be a cool way to try a bunch of different beers every month or you know, every week, depending on the frequency of drinking.
Yeah. So this is definitely more of an ale. I was thinking it might be a stout or bourbon, but you can see it's kind of a brown ale-y looking thing. So
looks good. Sean is timed out. There he is. He's back. All right, Sean, I'm going to introduce mine. It is a Saint Bernardus.
Nice.
Saint Bernardus. So we got Doberman Dan and Saint Bernardus.
Yeah, there you go.
Is that got a cork in it?
It does.
How cool.
Very observant. Very observant.
So that's like a 750 milliliter bottle.
Yes.
Something like that. Yeah.
So I'll give you a little background. This is an aged brew. It goes back. It's widely regarded as one of the best beers in the world.
Wow.
According to their website.
Yeah.
It is therefore no surprise that this is our brewery's flagship beer, ranked in the top of St. Bernardus beer hierarchy. So it is a 10% ABV. It is a dark. This is a dark ale. So
nice. All right.
But yeah, I get to pop the cork.
Yeah, let's see that bad boy.
Don't take your monitor out.
Man, look at that.
Oh, got a little
fizz.
A little fizz and a little fog or whatever fog. That stuff is. Beer fog. I don't know what you call that.
I've had beer fog before.
That's a different beer. That's a different fog. Oh, wow. What a head. Look at that. Yeah. Very thick.
Holy that's smokes, good man.
This is a, this is like a $12 bottle. So,
I might say. It's a big bottle. So, all right. Well, cheers, everyone. We'll take a taste. Cheers.
Oh, here we go. There you go. That's better.
So see, Dane, we even have a virtual clink going on. This is
upscale here. Didn't hear it earlier.
I like it. Applause soundtracks.
Yeah, man, we got it all. Got it all.
Noise.
All right, so we give a rating. You're drinking water. You're drinking Perrier. So.
Perrier. That's a step
Well, you know, probably the reality of this. What do they claim this comes from France? You know, the reality is wherever this is bottled, it probably comes from the tap, and then they shoot carbonation in it.
Yep.
So if I were to give this a rating compared to what you guys are drinking, this would be a point something, a point one, maybe
0.1 pint. There we go.
There we go. Water.
A deserved rating.
Oh, yes.
Deserved.
The water's overrated. I have a t-shirt somewhere that basically says that. So, I think the t-shirt says, great stories are never told around water over water or something like that. Now, if it's around the lake, that's a different, then the stories are good.
Yeah.
But, so Jonathan, what do you give your $12 bottle of beer?
Oh man, this is getting a very high one. It's got a, real nice aftertaste. not too sweet either. Again, it's just a dark ale, so it's not really doesn't taste like it would be a 10% ABV, but you know, after maybe a glass or so, I'll change my mind. So I'm going to give it about a 4, probably 4.8, because this is really, really good. Really
good. Wow, that's pretty solid right there. Yeah. I guess that's worthy of the best beer in the world. So, or among the best in the world.
Well, yeah. So they so say. Maybe I think that framed me a little, but I'm going to.
Yeah, probably. Probably. So I'm going to, I don't love this one. I love the can. I love the name. I do think it'll grow on me a little bit as it airs out. But it's, I'd give it like a 3.5. Mm-hmm. It's not awful, but it's just kind of all right in the middle.
What would you rate the name at though?
I mean, just because you know, we have three people on the show today and it's the three philosophers. I mean, the name's 5. I mean, that's why I picked it. Like, so they sold me on the name. So the marketing worked, but, taste leaves a little room for improvement.
Just to follow up real quick, Sean, with what you said, I'm looking at the, this beer, the St. Bernardus, and they said recommended pouring temperature is between 8 to 12 degrees Celsius. So that would actually be around like 50 degrees or something like that, Fahrenheit. I mean,
probably. Yeah. I've forgotten those conversion tables a long time ago. So
what you were reading is true.
It appears to be. It's not just, yeah. The trivia seems to be accurate. We'll find out as we keep doing that every week, but, yeah, good stuff. Well, let's jump in. Let's talk about some persuasion, some marketing stuff, some books, a book, Dan's book.
Just sell the damn thing.
Just sell the damn thing.
I like it. I love that title.
Yeah, it's a great title. So you wrote that, it's been 2 or 3 years now?
Yeah, I think so. It's probably closer to 3, I think. A lot of the content came from newsletters that I'd written. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, I just repurposed it or rewrote some portion of it. It was probably like 70% stuff from my newsletter that I repurposed, 30% new, maybe 60-40, somewhere right there.
So before we dive in, because I got a question about just the book title and that kind of stuff, but before we dive in, you got to do a little self-aggrandizing, tell people about who you are, where you come from, all that kind of stuff for however long you want or however short you want.
Okay. So I never intended to be any of the things I've done to make a living, to make money, to support my 2 bad habits, sleeping indoors and eating. I never wanted to be any of those.
And guitars.
Yes. And boutique guitars. I just wanted to be a professional musician. And, you know, that didn't work out for a lot of reasons, mostly because I didn't know what I didn't know. Woulda, shoulda, coulda, could have done that. But I thought, well, so I got to get something going, a job or something going to support, you know, put a roof over my head. Like the old joke is, what's the difference between a large pizza and a guitar player? Well, a large pizza can feed a family of 4. So I've done a lot of things. The first real job I had was, like I said, I wanted to be a full-time musician, smoked a whole lot of weed in high school. And so I wound up being a police officer.
The right career path.
Logical progression. Just through a series of what seemed to be random events, I wound up taking the civil service test in Dayton, Ohio for police officer. So I thought, you know, this would be a cool experience. I'll do this for a couple of years and then move on to something else. But I was there for 12 years. Wow. And the first 3, you know, full-time cop, and then the last 9 full-time cop, part-time serial entrepreneurial failure. Somebody recruited me for the Amway business, and I was horrible in that and failed at that, but it got me like start on the path thinking like, I get it. A business of your own. That makes more sense than being this civil servant thing. And so I kept trying to start all these businesses to get me free from the JOB. Because I thought, well, if I can make the same money I'm making on the police department, but doing it in my own business and have flexible hours, then I could, you know, feel like a real musician and focus on that without having to work without having to make money from it. So 9 years, multiple failed businesses. So it's a good thing I did have that full-time job all that time, or I would have been eating out of dumpsters. And then I discovered Dan Kennedy. I discovered his magnetic marketing system, mm-hmm. which, did you ever see the pitch for that, Jonathan, or hear the pitch for it?
Gosh, man, I've read so much Dan Kennedy copy over the years. I don't know which one. Tell me which one you're talking about.
This goes back a long time. This is like mid 90s.
Okay.
And it was pitched. It was like this three ring binder, this big three.
Oh yeah.
Binder.
Nothing special. Just a
cassette tapes.
Yep.
Six cassette tapes. Just print it out. Here's your stuff. Get out of here.
Exactly. This is $400. It's like 10th generation Xerox.
Right.
Copies of the paper.
Black and white. Like nothing special.
Yeah. Seventh generation audio cassette copies. You know, like the copy of a copy of a copy.
Yep.
Not great quality, but it was pitched as, this is like almost a done for you marketing kit,
yep.
you know, for your business. You don't have, no longer do you have to chase customers or clients. They come to you, just use this stuff, blah, blah, blah. It was a great pitch.
Oh yeah.
And so whatever business I was trying to get off the ground at the time that was failing miserably and sucking up all my spare money and money I didn't have, I thought, oh yeah, I'll buy this and this will save the business. But when I got the thing, I realized, like, man, this guy, $400, this is early 90s, I guess. That was an awful lot of money for me to spend.
Sure.
I thought, this guy got me to part with $400 for paper and ink.
Right.
With just a letter. And that's a way cooler business than whichever business I was trying to start.
Yep.
You know?
Right.
So I thought, I just want to do that. I want to sell stuff with letters. And so I just ripped off his system and I created my own self-published bodybuilding for beginners course and took out ads in the magazines, you know, two-step call for the free report. And then I sent them the sales letter and sold my self-published stuff. So that was after like 9 years of serial failures. That was the first mm-hmm. business that worked. And then like 12 months after that, I had equaled my police department income. So I left, goal achieved after 9 years. I left the police department then. And then that was, you know, ever since then, that's what I've been doing to support my two bad habits of, you know, starting these direct response businesses driven with my own copy.
Right.
That's my story in a nutshell, and I'm sticking with it.
I think
I like it.
Introduction to info marketing, like you were just talking about ordering the stuff from Dan Kennedy. I think that's like the first lesson is like when you part with your money over the first Dan Kennedy product and then realize after you get it, you're like, you start running the math in your head, like thinking about all the thousands of people who are ordering this, like this very thing that you just got for $4.97, that it's like mm-hmm. so cheaply done. Nothing impressive. And you're thinking, holy cow. So to me, that's like a lesson in and of itself. Cause I feel like, you know, most people are like, really? I can do this? That's
cool.
Yeah. That's how it starts. It's how you get the bug, right?
Yep.
You find out some of this stuff and then mm-hmm. you find out it's not quite as easy as it looks.
It's not.
No. No, not at all.
And yeah. I think that's probably a good segue, Dan, about things have gotten so complicated with direct response marketing. If I remember correctly, that's like one of the reasons you wrote the book was people were talking about all these funnels that did this and that and connected to this and swing back to that. And like, you know, and the free line and, you know, all this stuff. And you were like, just sell the damn thing.
Right.
Is that about right?
Yeah, that pretty much sums it up. And it could be, it could also be that I am, to quote Dan Kennedy, who wrote the foreword for my book, and this is what he said in the foreword, that I am a, quote, primitive brute. So so it could be my primitive brute viewpoint. Yeah, but really what motivated me to write it was, so like I started offline, right? So mm-hmm. that it was a mail order business. It was, I was going to say newspaper. It was magazine display ads and direct mm-hmm. mail. And that's how I learned. And then this buddy of mine, it was, I think, late 96. He says, you got to get online, man. And like I had an AOL account. If anybody even remembers what that was. Remember they like blanket sent out these 3.5-inch floppy disk, I think, to every house in the country. And that was, that was the extent of my knowledge, AOL. And he says, you got to get online, man. And so he helped me set up a website for my bodybuilding business on one of these like tripod.yada/123456789.10 You know, one of those cheap, the freebie domains.
Yeah.
So I get this website up. I mean, this is truly the Wild West days of the internet. Like most people don't even know what the hell the internet was. So I had a website up there and was collecting emails. Nobody knew what they were doing back then, including myself. All I knew is like, okay, so I learned this mail order stuff. I'm just going to apply it online. So I collected emails and sent them my like little email newsletters and always had a pitch in them, you know, or a link to a product or something like that. You know, I didn't know what I was doing, but it worked. And so, you know, I started back in the day when it was really, really simple online, and I saw things change and progress. And I saw all the guys come in with the move, the free line, and let's, Cialdini says, you know, the law of reciprocity. We're just going to keep giving them more free stuff. And we're going to build that relationship. When we finally do ask for a sale, you know, now they love us. And out of reciprocity, this law of reciprocity, you know, we're going to get sales. And I mean, that worked back then when the medium was so new.
Yep.
And I'm not going to say that it doesn't work now. There's still a time and a place in markets when that might be the right approach. But I saw a response to that really starting to tank after a while. Like 2010 for sure. I saw it tanking before that in a lot of different markets, but 2010 for sure. I saw like everybody kept teaching it. And I'm like, this ain't right, man. This ain't right. I'm seeing a big difference in quality from people who come in on an opt-in and follow this model. Let me keep giving him this free content, right? You know? And then, so I started my Doberman Dan site. It was either 2006 or 2007. And, you know, I follow that model. Let's give them a really hot opt-in that they want, build this list. You know, I'm giving all this free content, great content. And I had no intention of really making a business out of it. And then after I'd built a little bit of a list, I thought, let me see if I can make a business out of this. I still had my bodybuilding business, which had transformed years before that into a supplement business. So that was like my main gig. And I thought, let me see if I can make a business out of this. And Ben Settle, I mean, this is back, like I said, 2007, probably. Mm-hmm. Ben Settle even warned me all the way back then. He's like, just wait, watch what happens when you make your first offer, because you've been following that guru model of moving the free line. You're going to have a revolt. I'm like, no, man, all the online marketing guys say law of reciprocity, man. Cialdini wouldn't lie about that. And you know, they're going to love me. I mean, I've given them, you know, it took me, you know, over a decade to acquire this knowledge that I've been giving them away free. They're going to love me when I offer something for sale. Long story short, he was right. I was wrong. Boy, the fangs came out, man, from people who were acquired by that model. Then when I tried to offer something, like I said, this was back in 2007.
Right.
And online, I was still kind of following that model with my supplement business too, even though I was still doing offline customer acquisition in the supplement business, in addition to the online stuff. And I always noticed a difference in quality, the online acquired people, my supplement business, and the offline acquired people. It was a big difference. Conversions on the front end were much higher with the offline acquired people. Lifetime customer value was higher. And at first I was thinking, it's the media, you know, better quality people in offline media. No, it was the model. The online was pretty much move the freeline stuff. Offline, out of necessity, was you got to buy something, man.
Yeah.
You know, because I got ad costs I got to pay.
Yep.
And so I started figuring this stuff out, which was quite contrarian back then and still somewhat today. You know, I started saying, like, ditch that, move the freeline model. I mean, yeah, in certain situations and in certain markets, you know, it might be good to attract people with a freebie opt-in piece, but ideally, if you can do it, and if you really know how to sell, what you should be doing is just sell the damn thing. How they come into your funnel is by giving you money.
Right.
And so that's what, you know, I started writing about it in my newsletter first. I have a paid newsletter. And then, you know, that's when I thought, you know, I'll make a book out of this.
Yeah.
Yeah. So when we talk about moving the free line, basically we're talking about, you know, the free opt-in and then the free newsletter that goes on for a while. You quote, nurture people, you know, build the relationship. And then somewhere down the road at some point, maybe you offer them something, right? So you're moving that purchase further and further down the line in order to build value, reciprocity, and all that kind of stuff. And I agree. I think reciprocity still works, but it works as part of a overall strategy. Like when you give people, and you can do that within a sales letter, it doesn't have to be its own standalone thing, right? You know, Ben Savinga, Schwartz, like all these guys, they used to give valuable nuggets in the sales letter itself, right?
Right.
So that it's kind of, you don't have to, you know, have a wall between the free stuff and the paid stuff. Like it can be the same thing, but
sure.
Yeah. So hearing you say just, you know, basically you're skipping the opt-in and the first thing they hear from you is an offer, whether it's a book, free plus shipping, but something where they have to pay something. Is that right?
Yeah. Like, so for people who would be maybe nervous about trying this, you could always do the hybrid, which is, you know, go ahead and offer your opt-in bribe, but then immediately redirect them to an offer. Or, you know, another approach that I've done, well, I'm currently doing with my book is, it's like a two-step order process, which is, you know, the button specifically says, click here to order. There's nothing free offered. There's no opt-in offered. You know, so when somebody clicks there, they either have the intention of ordering or they're curious about ordering, you know, right, and they want to see what the shipping costs are or something like that. Right. And so it's two step. They earn a name and an email. Well, boom, email captured then, and then immediately redirected to the shopping cart. And then so that's the hybrid one. And then the full on just sell the damn thing, which I have started abbreviating JSTDT, is, you know, you arrive at the sales page and that's the offer. The click to buy button takes you to the shopping cart. There's nothing else. There's no email capture.
Sure.
Or nothing. And one, I used to run an in-person mastermind and a couple was there, had a business in the prepper space, husband and wife. And I thought they were doing really well. They had this, they called it a kitchen table business there. Their goal was one person, one laptop, $1 million. And they had achieved that. But like, and they had achieved that with the just sell the damn thing model. They never did opt-ins. They just drove right to a sales page. It was like a $40 product was the first initial product. And they built a really nice, you know, one person, well, in their case, two person kitchen table business. And their issue they brought up at the on their hot seat of the mastermind was like, we think we can grow this. I mean, there's potential to grow this, but you know, we've wanted to keep this a one person business. If we want to grow, we got to bring on more people. And so, you know, they were counseled like, what do you got to lose? Bring on more people. I mean, your business could be a blessing to other people. I mean, there could be people praying to work for a business like yours and you're going to provide a mortgage payment to these people.
Sure.
Let's reframe that. You know, you're looking at employees as being a pain in the ass. Let's look at something differently. And they, like, the light bulb came on and they went home, and don't quote me, it was either 3 years from that date or less than 3 years, they made the Inc. 500 fastest growing businesses, you know. Now they got a mid eight figure business, all built with the just sell the damn thing model. Never did opt-ins.
That's cool. Well, I mean, you know, you and I both have worked with and the guys over at Agora, and for the most part, they don't use opt-ins. I mean, they just sell. And I know for a while, probably in that same 2008-ish time, actually when I first started working there, they were trying the opt-in thing and they quickly abandoned it because they were wasting money on, but that's a little different. That copy, you know, sells really well. It's a good copy. Rabid list, you know, those kind of things. But yeah, they pretty much skip the whole opt-in thing and just go straight for the sale.
Yeah.
Well, and I think
most software companies do the same.
Absolutely.
These days.
And I think that, like you said, Sean, I think reciprocity still works. Mm-hmm. But I think there's also with that, with you getting somebody to invest, and it's usually a small amount of money, but I feel like nowadays you almost have to get people to feel like they've got some skin in the game. And because with reciprocity, or you giving something free away, to me, that lessens the value, or they don't feel like there's a commitment. They've made any commitment whatsoever. I feel like if I take a step back and on the consumer side of it, being the guy that buys the product, I feel like typically if I buy something or if I've spent some money, I've made a little bit of investment on my part, even if it's like $40, $47, $50. But I feel like I'm more apt to follow up on that and go through whatever that product is than if you give something free away. It's just kind of saved, downloaded, and yeah, I'll get to it. But it's not that important. It's the value has really gone down. So,
well, the other thing, and I've talked with a buddy of mine about this, and I'll see if you agree, Dan, knowing just human psychology, right? When you make a decision to download something, mm-hmm. that solves a problem, part of your brain believes the problem has been solved.
Solved, yeah.
Because you took the action. So until that need fires up again, like something else happens in their life that they're, oh, I guess that problem's not solved. So if you don't grab that customer, then it may be 2 weeks before they're back and they may forget about you or whatever. So that's why I think I like your idea about either do the two-step thing or immediately redirect them to a sales page that then re-intensifies that pain and that problem and that, you know, what they're trying to move away from.
Yeah. Right. You know, I mean, it's like an experienced marketer knows you got to test.
Yeah.
You got to test. I mean, you can't listen. Don't just wholesale buy into anybody's dogma, mine included.
Right.
Dogma, Doberman Dan. Dogma. and I'm just going to be really transparent here. So not probably. Definitely. And stuff I've written, I've been really dogmatic about this model for a couple reasons, because in my experience, it has worked so much better for me than the give freebie stuff away to what I call affectionately FSMs, freebie seeking mooches. Yep. You know, and I've seen it work really well in other businesses and other markets too. And there's also a bit of a persona thing going on when I'm dogmatic about it, you know? So like Doberman Dan, that's a persona, right?
Right.
You're getting a guru lesson here. Even though I hate that word guru, and I'm not a guru, but everybody knows what a guru is, at least in our world, and a marketing guru. So, you know, the persona is the best version of you. It's you with your best foot forward in, your faults are either downplayed greatly or not mentioned whatsoever. Everybody who's been on a first date gets this concept. You know, the exactly. first date, you don't show up in your wife beater t-shirt with a hole in it and coffee stains and burping and farting, you know, that's for the second date. The first date, no, you show up with your best foot forward. So like the whole persona thing and this created Doberman Dan persona, you know, is supposed to be the best of me, the larger than life me. And when I've written in that persona, I've been pretty dogmatic about this thing. Like this is it, man. You know, screw that freebie stuff. I mean, the reality of it is, I mean, you're not really getting my persona today. You're getting the flawed, infallible Dan Gallup. Maybe I should be the persona, but the reality is you got to test it. You know, sure. Like one of my, so one of my subscribers, I call them knights. I don't call them subscribers, but so just to clarify, my subscription deal is called the Marketing Camelot, and nobody wants to be a subscriber. So I call them knights in the Marketing Camelot. So one of my knights has a really high ticket service in, Beverly Hills. He does eye surgery. And so he tested, I give him credit. He tested this. His lead gen was a book given away. I think he does some local print advertising, but he also gives it away on his website, and he tested selling it, and he was able to sell the book. But what happened was, is less conversions, right? So he was getting money for the book as opposed to sending it free like he was previously. But what that did is obviously less people getting the book converted into less appointments in the office, therefore less, you know, high dollar procedures from all those rich people out in Beverly Hills. So in his case, like, it makes sense to give it away free. That's why I say you got to test this. Just don't sure. buy into my dogma.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. Obviously, you know, if you can make up some of the business on the back end, and like, it's not just testing one offer, it's testing your entire, you know, life cycle of a customer. Cause that can make a huge difference. You know, a guy whose average procedure is probably $7,500 to $15,000, you know, that he can do 8 of those a day. You know, that's a nice back end, you know, so.
Damn.
Remember all that. It's pretty good. Go back to school, get your license, huh? No doubt.
That's that'd be worth doing.
That'd be worth doing, yeah. 100 grand a day.
Yeah. You can get by on 60 grand a day.
I think so.
Yeah. Yeah. At least in Florida. I don't know about Austin. I'm beginning to doubt what you can get by.
California,
here.
You forget about it.
Yeah, you're living in slums at 60 grand a day.
Yeah. So yeah, that's a good point. No, and I appreciate you being like completely transparent with that. Like everything has to be tested. You know, Dan Kennedy, he's always dogmatic about direct response, but we also know some of the biggest companies in the world rely on branding.
Yeah.
It depends on where you're at in the cycle. You know, I think today there's a good mix of both going on. Like, you know, if you got just a absolutely ugly site, sometimes it works, but a lot of times it won't these days. Like the demand for pretty has gone up. Despite the email I just got from one of your buddies, Dan,
are you allowed to share who it was?
His initials are PL.
Oh, okay. I know who that is.
Yeah. So like that was like the worst email I've seen in 10 years as far as like just graphically. I was like, wow, is this homeschool project for your kid? Like it's just looks pretty rough. Didn't even know where to click in the email to buy whatever he was selling.
Holy smokes, man.
Actually, I think I clicked on it and it was like a download. So you could download a form to send in to buy the stuff.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you know who I'm talking about.
I've had my same questions about that.
So there is like old school direct marketing, you know, there is still that group out there that's like old school still the best and like still fax your orders in, whatever. But there's when you can be open-minded enough to blend the tools and technology we have today, be willing to test, be willing to be wrong. It's funny. I was talking to one of my junior copywriters last night. She's working on some stuff and she was the person that was like copy chiefing her before. They wanted to only see like finished copy. I'm like, no, send me the draft, send me your ugly stuff so we can see if you're on the right track and what we can, you know, improve and things like that. And she was like, really? I thought good copywriters were just good. I'm like, no, most of them have a buddy they bounce ideas off of.
Sure.
You know, they're in a group with somebody or, you know, they're in a, you know, like at Agora, there's 10 or 12 of them in a room and they can just all day long bounce ideas and copy and drafts back and forth. So there's this mystique around copy and marketing that it just, you just get good at it and you just do it and you don't have to test that much. And you just roll out winners all the time.
Yeah. Right.
I mean, I don't know about you, Dan, but that's never happened for me. Like, it's a slog.
It's always a slog, you know, but nobody wants to see the sausage being made, right? It's like so disappointing. After I told you guys about the 9 years of all those multiple business failures, like minimum two businesses a year for 9 years, I kept trying to get off the ground, all failed. Some years, three a year. And so, yeah, my first mail order business, my first attempt at copy was successful, selling that self-published course. Mm-hmm. But the thing was, like, that sounds good. I mean, it sounds like, yeah, it wasn't too hard. Well, first of all, there were the 9 years of getting beaten up so badly.
Yeah.
But then, you know, that first sales, I didn't know what I was doing. All I had to model after was those sales letters I saw from Dan Kennedy and that magnetic marketing kit I bought.
Yeah.
And so I didn't know anything about writing in general. My sales letter was successful. But the thing is, I'm like, we're talking about 40 different first drafts of just the first damn sentence.
Yeah.
You know, like, I didn't know what I was doing, but I knew it wasn't good enough.
Sure.
Like, I knew this has to sell, man. These people don't know me. I'm asking for initially with just, you know, $40, but still with inflation factored in, it's like, I think 1.2 million in today's dollar.
Yeah, something like that.
You know, but I knew it had to be, you know, there couldn't be any superfluous stuff. It had to be hard hitting, concise, you know? So like I worked really, really hard on that letter. And, you know, still, you know, what is it, 26 years later, it does not come easy.
Yeah, no, it's, and people, I think people who sit down and try to write copy, and there's a team of copywriters with one of my clients right now. And they just don't get this yet about just how much to really get to from a C to a B and B to A. And I've never personally written what I would consider A level copy. That's a pretty small group, but like every single word matters, and deleting every extra that or passive verb, or, you know, switching out a verb that's okay for one that just sings when you read it, you know, that's the kind of stuff that people just, I think, especially in the kind of the online age, I don't think they put enough time and effort into.
Right.
Because it's so easy to put it up, throw it up, test it, see if it works. But that's pretty dangerous, because you could have a really good idea. It's just not well written.
Yeah.
And you lose, and you just walk on to the next one. And that could have been your million-dollar idea if you had to put a little more fine-tuning on it.
Good point. There's a... I can't see, my bookshelf is over here.